Amazon 5-star Theater presents Real Customer Reviews, performed by Ed Helms. Tonight's review, Tactical Jacket. I was living a simple life. Didn't get out much. Then, I bought this jacket, and everything changed. Women came flocking to me from lands domestic and foreign. On the 245-day sailboat voyage home, I was attacked by a shark. I knew it was the jacket he was after. Giving up the jacket in exchange for my life. 5 stars. Amazon customer 69. Shop the perfect gift this holiday on Amazon.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tis the season for identity theft. This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But guess what? Identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss by yourself, even if you keep an eye on your bank and credit card statements. If your identity is stolen, your own U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. And all plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package. The last thing you want to do this holiday season is face drained accounts, fraudulent loans, or other financial losses from identity theft all alone. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART. Or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
This is Hidden Killers Year in Review. A look back at the biggest stories of 2025. This is Murder in the Morning with Tony Bruschi and Stacey Cole.
The trial of Lori Vallow Daybell continues on. And I know yesterday I said, maybe she's going to surprise us. Maybe we're going to see a totally different side of Lori Vallow Daybell. I take all that back.
Yeah, I would hope so.
Well, I haven't watched much of it today yet. We're about to watch Kent Keller, who was the captain of the Chandler Fire Department back at the time. So he was one of the folks who responded to the murder of Charles Vallow. And we're going to watch a piece of Lori doing cross on this. The prosecution just got done kind of outlining what happened, and we'll now see Lori ask him the questions. We did get a little bit of a preview yesterday after opening statements, which she surprised me on. I thought she did better than I thought she would, which that's a pretty low bar, right? But she still like kind of hit the low bar.
Mm-hmm.
When she's now cross-examining people, it's more kind of like, I watched some crime shows, and now I'm just going to go up and act and say words that really don't pertain to anything. I'm just going to ask random questions. There's no real cognitive direction I'm going with anything. And it's basically filling time to make you feel like you got your participation trophy. That's really kind of what it's feeling like right now. Is that how you're kind of, how are you taking this?
Well, I sent you a link to something that I'm feeling from this. I'm getting Legally Blonde vibes out of this. Now, if you don't know what that is, you should look it up, because there is a courtroom scene in Legally Blonde with Reese Witherspoon where Elle Woods, who is a Harvard law student, she is prosecuting somebody in court. Mm-hmm. First time she's ever done this. And she's asking really stupid questions. But because it's Hollywood, she finally picks up on something that is pivotal pivotal and gets her to what she needs.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that's going to happen. She's not going to hit her stride here, but I'm feeling Elle Woods at this point without the happy conclusion.
I feel like Elle Woods is far more competent. Honestly.
Oh,
I mean,
absolutely. Yeah,
I mean, far, far more. Like, this is like, Elle Woods on a bad day.
Yes.
So let's without further ado, just jump into it. This is some Kent Keller testimony from day number two of the trial of Lori Vallow Daybell. Let me just bring it up over here and we'll watch right, and listen. Cross.
I like her jacket, though. It's cute.
I wonder if she knitted it in prison.
Captain Maybe. Keller.
Yes.
You were first on the scene?
The police department was first, but yes, we were the first fire unit.
First fire on the scene.
Mm-hmm.
And can you explain to us what staging is exactly? I'm not really sure.
Sure. Staging... when there is some violent incident, the fire department, the firefighters don't have protective equipment for that sort of a scene. So we will go to a place where close to whatever the dispatched address is, that we would be a place of safety, but close so that as soon as the scene is... made safe by the police department, then we would enter into the scene.
So that would be like a couple houses away, or
could be a couple really? Houses, could be behind cover. In this case, it was a gunshot was the call. So you want to make sure that you are a little ways away, you know.
Okay.
In case there was more gunshots.
For safety.
Right. So you parked somewhere on the street, but a couple houses down from the house. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And then part of that staging is you stay there until you get the all clear?
Yes, until the police department says that it's safe to enter the scene.
Okay. And you were wearing body cam that day?
No, we don't wear body cam.
Oh, you don't wear body cam. Okay. You were just on the... That was a picture from you on the body cam.
On
someone
the
else's
officers.
Body cam.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Do you use any instruments to obtain current body temperature? Do you
No.
guys have an instrument for that?
No.
No? Would that help you give a more approximate time of calling a time of death?
It wouldn't help me. I'm not trained to do that. So we don't have that. It's not within our scope of practice.
Bring a meat thermometer.
It's not part of paramedics training.
No, that's okay. The medical...
It's Lori Vallow. Don't expect her to know what
I know. I'm sorry. And I'm an EMT.
You explained
or used to be,
the,
so.
The modeling being patchy looking skin.
Yes.
Because of no oxygen to the skin. Is that correct?
Decreased, yes.
where are we going?
Will that continue to increase? I don't really understand. Like, it. Would you say modeling is complete or in progress? How does that work?
I would say in progress as less and less tissue had oxygenation, I would say it continues to model.
So would you say it was in early progress or late progress? How would you estimate that?
That's not
that?
For him to decide.
I could not say early or late, just modeling.
I feel like everybody's just kind of like letting her do her thing.
That modeling was like, present.
Yes. It doesn't matter. Just
but
let
that's,
her
so,
go.
That's not
how
their
long
job.
Would it take for modeling to become present? That's kind of my question.
I don't know.
It's kind of your question.
So it could be like
different,
a
different for different.
Do you have any good recipes for sourdough?
So it could be a minute, 5 minutes.
Yeah, no.
Hold on. Rephrase the question. I'll allow it, but make sure you let him answer before you ask your next question.
Okay. So it could be just a few minutes, possibly.
Possibly. I don't know.
Okay. And then lividity, you explained as a pooling of blood. The blood leaves the tissues and goes to the bottom. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And you saw that as well?
Yes.
And in your estimation, would that have happened soon? You know what I'm... Oh,
no, it question. Takes time.
I feel like she's trying to treat this like it's a police corruption case, which it's not.
Right. And was it advancing... How far?
I can't see.
He had lividity on the back of his torso.
So does lividity...
Backs of his arms.
Does lividity start immediately after the heart stops? Is that what you were saying?
I suppose it does.
Okay. Mm. And if you were on any kind of medication, would that affect that as well?
I couldn't say.
How is any of this relevant to anything?
And what time of death did you document? You were making the document, is that correct?
Yes, ma'am.
And what time of death did you document?
I did not put time of death, but I put a time of treatment being ceased. And I don't recall what that time was. It's on that report.
And you had stated that you were listening to dispatch on the radio. Is that correct?
Yes.
So were you listening to the actual 911 operator speaking?
No. Whoever is calling, if you call on the phone to a 911 operator,
it's like
they would give that information to
like
a
dispatcher. School tour is coming by. Here's how this works.
A call with the pertinent information.
Okay. So you were getting kind of updates as it went along?
That's how dispatch and fire works.
Call,
oh my God.
And then if it were pertinent for us, like the scene is secure, PD says the scene is secure, go in, then we would get that. PD would then call dispatch and dispatch would then call us.
Okay, so were you aware at all that they had asked him to come outside?
No.
Okay.
So you were in the shower?
You just saw that he was outside.
Are you zestfully clean?
The 911 operator had told him to come outside, is that correct?
I did not know who he was or how he was involved in it.
Okay.
We arrived.
So on those dispatch updates, it wasn't saying like shooter is in-house or shooter is outside or anything like that. Okay. That wouldn't
no,
be.
Not the to scene us. Was secure.
That's what I'm saying.
That might be to the police.
What is she trying to get at?
I don't know.
We would hear.
Okay.
I don't think she knows.
In this case, Captain Keller, do you know for a fact that CPR had not been given?
I do not know for a fact.
And do you know for a fact that CPR had been given?
I know for a fact that we gave CPR.
Prior to your coming in?
No.
We gave it prior to our coming in. Yeah, that makes sense, Lori.
All right, redirect.
That's where she ends it. What is she arguing? Is she arguing that, like, they didn't give CPR to him quick enough and that's what killed him?
Pause it for just a second. I think that she's trying to argue
when the heart stops and the blood is no longer...
That maybe there's doubt that they did try to do CPR. You know,
that's not what's up for debate here.
Good at it.
So what? This is about her conspiring to kill him. This is not about if they did CPR quick enough.
Right. But I can tell you, when the paramedics got there and they said that they felt that initial crunch, when you do that compression on the very first time, you're going to get that crunch come back to you. Like, oh shit, I just cracked the sternum. It's a very sobering thing when you first do it.
I'm shivering.
I know, it's awful, but it's a very telltale sign that you are the first one to do compressions, unless they were sitting there going, doink, doink, doink. I'm kind of trying to do CPR, but I'm not doing it very well.
Yeah.
To me, the body, the scene was quiet. There wasn't a whole lot of stuff around there. They walked in and went, it looked a certain way. They can't decide the cause of death, but it was pretty obvious. They looked around and went, okay, nobody tried to do anything here. The guy was shot twice and he dropped and they left him kind of there and made it look like a setup.
Well, and the way he was shot, there's nothing anyone could have done.
Right.
Like at the end of the day, it does not matter if someone had tried to do CPR or not. It would have been like nice if like Alex had attempted it, then it would show like he was trying to not leave him to die. Mm-hmm. But again, it really wouldn't have mattered. If anyone's at fault for not attempting CPR, it's Alex. Or anyone else in that house, for that matter, at that initial moment, because it took him 40-some minutes to call 911.
47 minutes.
So when it takes you that long, the person at fault is Alex. And Lori, you're connected to Alex. That's what this case is about.
Right. She's losing focus of what they're after. It's not,
I don't know.
Did you do CPR? Who shot him? That's what's pertinent here.
Well, she's trying to, this doesn't even connect to her. This is a family tragedy story of that Charles was going to beat Tylee with a bat. Isn't that kind of what she was saying the other day or something of that nature? And then Alex came in and got in between that and got the bat away and shot him because he was going to beat Tylee with a bat because there's so much evidence to show that he was an abusive father to Tylee. There's nothing. Just out of nowhere, he's going to go beat the hell out of Tylee. God. But again, you're dealing with a crazy person. This is, the dots don't connect. They will never connect.
She's got a theory, and she's trying to lead them to that theory is what it feels like.
Yes, yes. I think she thinks she's going to have some miraculous day in court where it's going to be like her Matlock moment. And
yeah.
Like, see? I've uncovered the
truth. I did
the
order
truth.
The code red. Yeah.
Watch a little bit more of this. This is going to be more of the same guy, and this is
and,
redirect.
You told us, I think on direct, that lividity is something that you see much later.
Yes. I would expect that, yes.
Have you treated patients before within a few minutes of their heart stopping?
Yes.
Do you see lividity in those people?
No.
Do you see modeling in those people?
No. You see skin conditions change in those people, gray or cooling, moisture, but not modeling or lividity.
So you're not here to tell us how long it takes for those to form, right?
I don't know.
All you can tell us is that it's something that you see in patients who are deceased?
Yes.
For a while.
And have been deceased long enough, whatever time period that is, for that to happen.
Right. It is an indication of
death.
The patient no longer being a viable patient.
And they've been there for a while.
And that was one of the things that you noted and used in determining to end any life-saving measures?
Yes.
Now, is the only way to know if CPR has been given to be there with the person watching them?
No.
What else can tell you that CPR was given to a patient?
Well, PD on scene arriving would witness, the best way would be witness CPR.
That's the best way. Is there any other ways?
Well, yes. Again, you would have an indentation in the chest. The sternum would likely be have been cracked loose from the rib cage.
Can you reconnect the sternum after if you live? Like, how does that work? What happens then?
Maybe Nephi could have.
You do CPR or CCR.
CCR, Confederate Railroad comes over.
Not trauma, cardiac.
In this case, were other indicators the blood that was pooling only at the neck and not spread out further?
Yes.
the lack of pooling underneath the victim?
Yes, and the mechanical action of doing compressions with a right. with a gunshot wound right there would have spread blood in the in that area as well. It wouldn't just have gone where gravity is.
So where you saw is where you saw the blood pooling was where gravity, a low spot.
That was my interpretation of it, yes.
And you did not observe spread blood across his chest?
No.
Would ongoing CPR movement of the blood through the body have also limited the modeling you may have seen?
Perhaps.
Ultimately, is it your opinion that it is unlikely that CPR was given to this patient prior to fire arriving?
Yes.
Thank you. I have no other questions.
Yeah, no shit.
Are there any juror questions? I see at least one coming down. Please pass those down. Put on the white noise first.
I didn't know that jurors can ask questions. That's pretty cool.
Some jurisdictions allow that. It's not everyone.
Okay.
But some allow,
this is the first I've ever heard.
Yeah, there was a case last year that had it too. I forgot. I don't know which one it was.
I think that's smart because, you know, it prevents them getting to the jury room 10 days later and asking a question, having to go back. Now they can ask right now.
The question is, how batshit crazy do you think Lori Vallodegal is? That'd be great.
Hey, they already lost a juror today, another one.
In this
so now
case?
There's two women. Yep. There's now just two women on the jury.
Why did they leave? Do we know?
I believe she claims she saw a video that she didn't disclose.
Oh.
So she talked about it today that she had seen a video, that it was an algorithm issue had come up and she remembered that she had seen it. So they're dropping like five.
I think she wants to not spend the next several weeks of her life enduring this.
Yeah.
I don't blame her. Like, I saw a video. Take me out.
I watch a lot of TikTok. I saw a whole bunch of shit on this.
She pulled the rope on the bus, if anybody remembers what that is. Yeah.
Everybody out. Yeah.
So he sits there for a little bit.
He kind of looks like Colonel Sanders. I kind of like it.
Treated differently than if someone has a heart attack.
Kind of does.
I believe it was that the state.
We got Lori having some fun here with the judge.
At the time, and advancements in technology may change what was able to be extracted, but that's different than the state withholding information.
That was the state's reading of the affidavit. I think the other concern comes from the fact that back on March 18th, when the state was filing motions to preclude Lonnie Dworkin, the court had a discussion with the defendant about this, about whether or not she wanted to waive time to have time for her expert to do this.
Mm.
And at that time, the court asked her if there was any one device that she wanted to review, which was, from the defendant's own mouth, Charles Vallow's phone. So now we have a motion that was filed, mind you, 7 days after they received the affidavit from their expert. So they held off on disclosing that while we weren't in trial, and then in the middle of trial, filed it, asking for information on numerous other devices that are in various other police agencies' possession. So,
Judge.
Although I think ultimately, I mean, the big issue is clearly the state would object to any motion to dismiss. There is no exculpatory evidence. There's no even discussion of exculpatory evidence in Mr. Dworkin's statement or their very minimally fact-invasive motion, let alone any prosecutorial misconduct. But I think we're back to the issue of Mr. Dworkin and what he's going to be permitted to bring in or talk about at this point in this trial.
All right. Did you want to argue that motion right now?
Not right now.
Not right now.
Well, when do you want to argue it?
When?
Next week.
Do you want me to argue it right now?
I'm not asking you to, but I indicated when I read your motion that it does appear not to be any discovery violation, but that the state turned over the evidence that it had
at the time, and advances in that software that maybe make more information available upon an extraction than was available when they did the extraction isn't a discovery violation. I'm looking at this as more of a discovery request for additional information, which at this point in the game, I'll allow you to do your discovery requests, but I don't know that any information that's discovered between now and the end of trial would be coming in because it's so late.
In reading that affidavit, I would agree with you that that was my initial thought as well. But the problem is that the problem that we have here is that that software was available and those things were available and they were not handed over from the state. They were never handed over from the state and they've had that information for years. So that's why we filed that motion is because of our expert was able to download the one device that we got that he was able to see that the complete downloads were never given, that these are reports of downloads when we know that the state had available the entire complete extraction in the first place. They just didn't give us the entire extraction. They gave us the reports of the extractions, the ones that they wanted us to have. So those were available according to the technology. They just didn't give them to us on all of the devices. But we only have proof of it on one device because that's the only device that we were able to do in a timely manner.
All right. I want to clarify a little bit. They gave you the full extraction that was available to them at the time.
No, they pulled a report from the full extraction and gave us that. That's what they gave us.
State, want to respond?
Your Honor, when you extract data from a device like a cell phone, it is put into a formula where it is not readable by anyone, which is why then you use the Cellbrite technology to basically parse that data into areas that we can read and view and review.
Is that what was given to the defense?
That is what was given to the defense, was the 2019 or 2020 version of the Cellbrite technology that was used to take that extraction and put it into a readable form so that you can look at, for instance, not having to search through all this data to try to find out a text message, all of them are put together with dates and times and people and locations.
Your Honor, I would request that we can have a hearing on this so that I can bring in Lonnie Dworkin and he can explain that what they did not give us.
Well, just reading his affidavit is what they gave you is what they had available to them at the time. There's no affirmative duty for them to every time a new software version comes out that makes maybe more data available to rerun all the information.
We're not claiming that it is. We're claiming that they had a full extraction and they gave us a report of that full extraction instead of the full extraction on all the devices. It's not what only was available to them. They did have that available. They just didn't give it to us. It's cherry picking. What we got.
I don't read your own expert's affidavit the same way you're reading it, but
that's why I'd like him to be able to come in and explain it. Can we set that up?
Well, we can set that up at some point, but again, this is all late and it's unlikely that anything
your trial's going on
would lead to him being allowed to testify, but maybe we'll do that this Friday or something. I don't know. We'll have to squeeze it in, but I'm not going to make the jury wait to do that.
Okay.
We'll be at recess until 1:30.
There you go. Little
wow. Wow.
A little Flavor Flav of the trial of Lori Vallow Daybell.
Wow. she was asking, one of the things that I had heard was she was asking what color the shirt was that Charles was wearing when the paramedics were cutting it off of him. What color was the shirt? And I'm just like, does any of this matter?
No, it doesn't.
Thank you.
It doesn't. Okay. Do you think he was wearing aftershave that day? Was it the one that I bought him on our trip to Cancun all those years? Yeah, it's just
her mind's firing in different places, and she thinks it all makes logical sense. Obviously, it doesn't.
Yeah.
And I think she's acting like what she's asking is important. She's acting like what she's asking she understands, and neither is it important, and neither does she understand what she's even talking about.
And that's what's disturbing. She should not be her own attorney.
No.
Nope.
She's not competent.
No.
Like, just because she understands that she's representing herself in court doesn't necessarily make you competent.
No.
There's too many other things going on in that woman's mind. But the circus continues. We'll have more lions and tigers and bears and more hot pokers that we can stick into the cage and watch all this go down as it continues. But you want to listen to the full day's coverage? We have it for you on our audio podcast, wherever you get podcasts. Just search for Hidden Killers of Tony Bruschi or True Crime Today or The Trial of Lori Vallow-Daybell. There's a channel specifically for that if all you want to do is consume Lori Vallow-Daybell material for the next several weeks. It will all be there for you to binge away on. So there you go. In the comments on YouTube, tell us what you think about the case thus far and her testimony and where this is all going. Does she have a point? Are we missing this? Are we seeing something not correctly through the prism of Lori Vallow-Daybell? Let us know. More to come.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Lori Daybell. Lori effing Daybell, as we like to refer to her around here. Oh my gosh, the trial is underway. I've been watching as much as I possibly can of it. We've been bringing you a lot of clips, the opening statements on both sides, and kind of breaking down stuff piece by piece. But a man who's been literally watching it play by play, Bob Mata, defense attorney, host of the podcast Defense Diaries. I'm going to throw it to you because you've seen more of this than I have thus far. What the hell's your take on it?
It's number one. Hey, what's up to you?
Hey.
It's been a minute.
Yeah.
Welcome back.
Thank you. You too.
It's boring so far. Yes. It's like the key kind of phrase that I can think of, the best way to describe it thus far. It's like any state case. It kind of clunks out of the gate a little bit. And, you know, they're putting on the witnesses, kind of building the timeline. And, you know, ultimately we'll start getting into the juicier stuff in terms of the real evidence that can prove that she was a part of the conspiracy. But right now we're just, you know, with the first responders, you know, the first cop to the scene, hear a little bit from those folks, and then kind of like forced to listen through Lori's inane cross-examinations where it's hard to describe what she's doing. She's not. Like, she's asking all these questions. It feels more like a deposition.
Yeah, like, what I'm trying to put my finger on what direction she's trying to go, because I don't know that she knows what she's trying to do, where she's trying to go or what she's trying to do.
She doesn't. She has no idea. Yeah. I mean, you can't.
No.
You know, I mean, trying a case is not easy. It's not easy for lawyers, and it's certainly not going to be easy for somebody who's tried to prep themselves in prison. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's going to be a very challenging endeavor for her, you know, but do I feel any pity? Absolutely not. She made her choice. She's mm-hmm. the smartest person in the room. So, you know, she's going to reap what she sows through the end of this thing. And, you know, ultimately I have very little doubt that she'll be found guilty. I will say that as far as her opening went, she was competent. You know, I mean, I didn't think that she was like a bumbling fool up
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
I thought that she had a pretty linear timeline. I thought that she kind of like hit her points. You could tell that she had worked on that for a long time. You could tell her advisory counsel told her to use the phrase, the evidence will show, over and over and over. You know,
like to a fault. It was like, I think she thought she had to begin every sentence with it, no matter what, even if she was talking about evidence or not.
Right, exactly. Well, and the interesting thing is that she made a lot of promises, mm-hmm. right? I mean, she made a lot of promises with that phrase, the evidence will show. And I don't know how she's delivering any of that to the jury short of her testifying, because everybody that was in that home is no longer with us.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, I mean, she's literally the only person who's alive that could get any of that into evidence as to what happened in that house. So, I mean, it raises the question, is she going to testify? Now, that poses a huge issue for her, because that's what brings in her criminal record,
mm-hmm.
her background. If she testifies, the state gets to bring her entire criminal history in. And, you know, whether or not these jurors know about her, it's hard to say. I imagine that some of them probably do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, that's a real battle for her. You know, I mean, that's just because of human nature. I mean, they're not supposed to take those convictions into consideration in terms of whether or not she's guilty of this crime. But that's not how human beings work.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not what we do. You know, I mean, it's all kind of part and parcel of the same story, isn't it? It doesn't really matter that things took place at different times. It was all part of the grand scheme of things. So, yeah. You know, whether or not the jury's aware of it, if she decides that she's going to testify, it's all coming in. You know, I mean, it has to. So, because that's part of the deal. You know, if you get on, because they have the ability to be able to challenge your credibility. And one of the ways of doing that is bringing in your criminal history. So
is that like pretty much, though, a guaranteed you're going to be found guilty, Lori Vallow, if you decide to testify in this? I mean, no matter, I don't see anything she's possibly going to say by testifying herself that would outweigh bringing in JJ and Tylee's death. I don't know what that could possibly be.
I agree. And, you know, it's kind of it's a double-edged sword for her, because mm-hmm. it at the heart of it, it is a defense of others / self-defense type defense that she's putting on in mm-hmm. terms of she's claiming that her brother was defending Tylee
mm-hmm.
and, you know, that's why this whole thing went down. And, you know, short of her getting on to the stand and saying what happened in there, how is she getting that story out? You know what I mean? Yeah. And it's like, if she doesn't do it, I just don't know how she's going to deliver on her side of the story at all.
You know, yeah, there's really
nobody else in there.
There's no one that's alive that can speak to this anymore. Right. Were you surprised? I mean, no, I was a little bit surprised. Let's go back to the opening statements that we had from Lori. My bar was pretty low on this of what to expect. I was surprised actually how well she did on her opening arguments there. And I was also surprised that she didn't bring religion into it at all yet. I was expecting some, you know, zombie-ish something in there, but she seemed to have enough competence to go, maybe not yet, or maybe not at all. I don't know. What was your reaction to that?
Yeah, same. And, you know, the state had, they certainly didn't dive deep into the religious side of it either. Mm-hmm. They certainly brought up like the knee-high stuff, you know, because they're going to tie that up, and they're going to do that with respect to what, you know, translating what these text messages between Lori and Alex meant,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they're like, those are going to be the smoking gun evidence for them. And they're going to have to bring it in to a certain extent, whether or not it's going to be anywhere near what we saw in the first trial. I don't think so.
Yeah,
and I don't think that they should. I think this is a much cleaner story for the state without having to get into all of that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, they're not having to really create the narrative for the jury as to like how this mother came to ending her own two children's lives like they did the first time, wherein, you know, showing kind of like where her brain had gone in its delusional state mm-hmm. with respect to thinking that the kids were demons and they were no longer, you know, in there, and that they were just vessels. And there was like, so, you know, it's like for that kind of stuff, they had to bring that in because they had to be able to show, look,
yeah,
this is where her head was. Like, this is why she did it. This was her motive. And, you know, and I mean, they charged her with, you know, still collecting the Social Security benefits, but like that wasn't enough money to be a true motive. Like they had to show that she was just warped, you know, that she, like, this is what she was thinking, that she thought the end of days were coming. She didn't think that her kids were her kids anymore. And that was the reason. Here, it's a very different case for them in the sense that I think they have to bring a little of it in, but they don't have to bring in the full weight of it, which I think is good, you know, because I think it'll get confusing to the jurors if they're not going to go all in. Like that's just not a story. You can kind of cherry pick a few things and throw it in there. And if you've got jurors that are not familiar with her story and the background of the case, they're going to be like, what? Like, what does any of this mean? You know what I mean? Because like I kind of felt when I was listening to the state's opening statements that it was a little disjointed. I thought I didn't think it was bad, but I thought it was a little kind of a little hit or miss in terms of like, is the jury able to discern what they're getting at here?
Yeah.
You know, it's like kind of stick on the bigger things like, okay, well, Charles had the life insurance policy, money was the motive here, you know, and ultimately she wanted to be with Chad. So she had these two things that were going on. And without really having to dive deep into the religious side of it, you know, but I mean, there is a like a pretty big Mormon population in Arizona as well.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not as if, you know, you're trying to tell this story to like a Chicago jury where, you know, Mormonism and LDS isn't as big out here.
Yeah.
You know, where you're going to have a lot of people like, what does any of this mean?
You get laughed out of the room. Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, we'll see how it plays out, but, you know, to me, the biggest question is going to be whether or not she's going to testify.
What's your thoughts on the story that she's presenting, in her opening arguments that it was, Alex was trying to defend Tylee from a rageful Charles Vallow who was going to swing a bat at her, although there really had been no documented abuse whatsoever between Charles and the kids. And I'm wondering with that, you know, we said nobody's around to talk about. Colby is.
Yeah, for sure. Now, I don't think Colby was living with them at the time.
I know.
But we do know that Colby and Tylee talked all the time.
Yeah.
You know, they were tight. So in terms of, you know, but then that becomes a hearsay situation. How was he able to get in those conversations?
Sure.
So, I mean, she represented that there was like some video that exists as to some of these interactions between Charles and Tylee, how she's going to get those in or if they really exist.
That's the question. Do they exist? You know?
Right. You know, so, I mean, we're going to have to wait and see, you know, I mean, that's going to have to be her story. You know, it was always, it's like, that's what I was saying. I mean, she's coming in with this defense of another situation. And I just don't know how she gets there without testifying, man. I just don't.
I don't know. I'm trying to understand what the big deal with the CPR argument has been thus far, because we've been hearing it from the state and from her. What's the point of this argument? We know he was shot. The first officer has said, you know, when I got there, he was not revivable. It was one of those things. It just is what it is. But there seems to be like, I don't know where she's going with her arguments, and it may be absolutely nowhere, but it still seems to be somewhat of a focus. I mean, as of today, as of where we're at with technically day three of the trial as we're recording this.
Yeah, I think that her bigger purpose was there was a 47 minute gap from the time that they think that Charles was shot to when Alex calls 911.
Sure.
You know, I mean, the argument from the state certainly would be that they had to make sure that he was dead and that he was not revivable before they called 911. So that's kind of their thing. And then the other part of it is that the state's going to insinuate that Alex never actually tried to do CPR on him. Mm-hmm. So that's where you got into the cracking of the sternum.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, why that kind of stuff hadn't happened, and would blood be gushing out of the wound when there, if Alex had been performing CPR on the chest. So that was kind of her thing. She was trying to establish that they don't have any way of proving that Alex did not perform CPR, because that's a damaging fact for, mm-hmm. you know, for Lori and for Alex Cox in terms of their narrative that he shot in self-defense and that, you know, he was directed by 911 to try to revive him and, you know, talking him through the CPR. And, you know, the state's narrative is going to be that he didn't try anything. He just sat there looking at him. So that's what she was trying to get in. I think that was the purpose of a lot of her questions, was to establish that, you know, somebody who's not familiar with doing CPR and isn't, you know, doing the compressions with the amount of pressure that you need to, that they wouldn't necessarily have broken that sternum and cracked ribs trying to press down. Whereas with first responders who know what they're doing and whose number one, you know, goal is to get that person resuscitated, mm-hmm. you know, oftentimes they will crack bone when they're trying to do it, because you're trying to get to the heart in order to get that thing pumping again. So, you know, I think that that was ultimately what her point was, because at the end of the day, it's going to be pretty damaging facts for Lori in terms of whether or not Alex actually tried mm-hmm. to resuscitate him. So, you know, I mean, I think she did what she could. She's got obviously no medical background.
Yeah.
And, you know, her trying to cross-examine people that have, you know, knowledge and experience in doing that was pretty clunky.
Obviously, this is a conspiracy case. This is not that Lori Vallow is the one who pulled the trigger. It's that she was conspiring with her brother, Alex, who is now dead, to kill Charles Vallow. Are they going to have a difficult time proving this? Because you got to show why would Alex want to do her bidding? I know, you know, bidding, you know, motive, I know you don't have to prove, but it's kind of a big part of this in a conspiracy to show, okay, why would this guy, why would he do it? Why would he go kill people for Lori? How are they going to establish that in the case like this?
And that's part of the challenge for the state in this case, mm-hmm. because they're not going to theoretically delve into all of the other parts of the story, because either they've chosen not to or because they were barred from doing it. Mm-hmm. And I mean, anybody who knows the story knows that Alex was her henchman. You know, I mean, he was the guy doing all the dirty work for Chad and Lori. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, I think that there's a lot of people, including myself, that think that they had a hand in his untimely death from a pulmonary embolism. That I think that there's, if you do even a basic Google search, you can see that you can facilitate that, mm-hmm. You know, by basically pumping air into somebody's, you know, it's essentially just getting an air bubble in there, and you can cause that to happen.
Yeah.
How they're going to be able to prove it up is going to be challenging without getting that side of the story in. Mm-hmm. It's going to boil down to these text messages between Lori and Alex. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why I was saying, that's why I think that they brought up the Nephi stuff. They're mm-hmm. going to explain what that meant, what mm-hmm. the significance of it is in these text messages. And that, you know, for them, it was kind of, you know, the lingo that they spoke and that was, you know, that was her giving directions, and that was her inquiring as to if things were done and, you know, was it finished, you know? And I mean, they're going to have to build it through circumstantial evidence that, you know, they stayed away from the house mm-hmm. for a very long period of time. They're at the Walgreens, and they're at the Burger King, and, you know, all those things. And you heard the strange chocolate milkshake testimony.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that the cop brought that up because of the amount of melting that had occurred with the shake, you know, because it was really hot out that day. So, you know, the cop was trying to say, well, according to the milkshake, you know, they had been out there for a minute, or, you know, they had just gotten back from Burger King because it was still pretty much frozen, you know? So it's It's got different challenges in the first case, that's for certain.
Well, and some of it just shows how ridiculous the story is without, it's like, show me how ridiculous this is without showing me how ridiculous this is. You find out that your husband is dead or murdered, and you take the kids to Burger King. I mean, it's just like, I wouldn't even be taking them to school. You know, it'd be like, let's go to my friend's house today. I have to go deal with this, and then I'll come get you, and we can talk about this when we need to. It's like, take him to Burger King, take him to school, just like it's an ordinary day. And she backs it up in the opening statements of, I took them because he promised that he would take them, so I had, you know, basically had to fulfill that Burger King promise.
When you see the interview there.
Yeah.
Like with the cop and her, and she, like, it just is not a woman who has any compassion.
No,
it's like, if you were watching that, not knowing what happened, what preceded it, you would have no idea that anybody that she knew.
You think she was like the neighbor,
right? Like, and purportedly cared about at some point in her life. I mean, she had to have cared about, they were together for a long time. Mm-hmm. You would assume that there was some point in time that she had feelings for him. And you just saw no indication of it, you know, at all in that interview. And I'm talking about when they're standing outside of the house, mm-hmm. and you see Ty Lee over there just kind of standing there, and they're asking her questions, and she's just, you know, chuckling and just talking about it. Like, it's the weirdest thing. And it just really goes to her mindset. Like, I think that's very powerful evidence in terms of the jury's going to be looking at it like, what is going on with this woman? You know, like, that is just not a normal human response for a situation like that to have occurred, you know, an hour prior. Yeah. You know, it's like all those little things. It's going to be putting together all these little pieces in the circumstantial case. Again, like most cases, wherein you're going to have to be able to create this picture for the jury where there's going to be holes. But when they step back and they look at the totality of the circumstances and they see the picture of the puzzle that the state's put together, even with those little holes in the story, that you still see what the full picture is. And, you know, I think they'll be able to get there. But, you know, obviously I'm curious to see what they're going to do to be able to get that conspiracy charge, like, nailed, because mm-hmm. you do have to show agreement. You know, yeah. I mean, you have to meet each and every element. It's like I was telling Allie, because we had covered the first trial in depth.
Yeah.
And, you know, in that case, like, I had always felt, I'm like, this is one of those cases where this woman's gallivanting around in Hawaii when her kids are allegedly missing. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't seem to have a care in the world, is out buying wedding rings, is doing all the things that she did. And I just thought that the backstory of that was going to lead the jury to the conclusion that this woman had a hand in it without them having to meet each and every element, which is required by law. Mm-hmm. But this is one of those cases where I just didn't think that they were going to need to do it, because the jury's going to be like, I don't care that they met each and every element. Woman that didn't have a hand in it would have been acting like that.
Sure.
Like, no parent would be doing that. So, you know, she's going down. Here it's a little bit of a different circumstance, because again, you're not getting into all of the Ty Lee and JJ story, you know, mm-hmm. not to the extent that they did the first time. This is a, like, kind of an isolated incident, mm-hmm. and, you know, and it predates all the other stuff. Mm-hmm. And, like, they're going to have to just sell the concept of, she wanted to be with Chad and she wanted that money, mm-hmm. you know, and those two things were the driving motivation for her. And, you know, they'll be able to bring in that her and Chad were married very soon after, you know, and without her getting on the stand to put up some kind of defense and get her version of the story, I don't know how she's going to rebut it.
I don't know how she would rebut it either. I mean, we clearly know the state is going to bring in the whole Nephi thing and the whole wacky belief system there that they thought, you know, he was possessed by Ned. I always want to say Ned Ryerson, and I know it's not. Ned Ryerson. Yeah. Boom.
He's a very religious guy.
Yeah, I know it's not Ned Ryerson from Groundhog's Day, but
or Ned Flanders.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, or Ned Flanders.
Yeah.
Why they picked Ned, I don't know. Just what came to their mind. But they're gonna. I mean, this is all gonna be out there. This is all gonna be presented, and I wonder how triggering it will be to her when this stuff is presented, on how she's gonna handle anything on Cross for anybody, and what, you know, what is she going to do? What is she gonna say? Is she gonna go down that road of treating her beliefs system as if it is fact and everyone else in the room is crazy? That I think will be a very telling point when these sort of things get out and we get out of just the CPR area of the testimony that we're hearing about with Charles being on the ground.
Yeah, I mean, that's the testimony that makes this thing worth watching.
Yeah,
is like, see, when we get to that kind of aspect of the case, how she's going to handle it. Like, mm-hmm. is she going to go full nuts?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's like, you know, we've heard her. We've mm-hmm. heard her, you know, I mean, her theory is that we're all wrong and she's right. She's got it from up on high that, you know, everything that she thinks is the way that it's going to go down. And we're the ones who are nuts and, yeah. you know, that we should believe her. So, I mean, is she going to put that on display? I mean, she's got to realize that, we do think that she's all nuts,
mm-hmm.
and the jury is going to think she's nuts as well. So whether or not she believes in her heart of hearts and in her diseased mind that we are the crazy ones, that we're the ones who are just out of the loop because we don't believe her, is she smart enough to realize that that's not going to be an effective way to get a not guilty in this case? Because insulting the jury is the first way. To get yourself convicted in a case. So, it's going to be interesting.
She obviously has her own list of witnesses that she plans on calling, at least some of them. How is there any way, shape, or form that you see any of these people helping her? Or is it just going to be more folks that are going to end up sinking her on Cross from the prosecution?
I anybody that was a part of the story, I can't see any of them helping her. You know, if you've got like an expert or two,
yeah,
which I think that she does. Obviously, she's going to have to lean into those folks.
Yeah,
she again. You know, this is the challenge of going pro se.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's that old axiom. You know, the lawyer who represents themselves as a fool for a client. You know, and she is the lawyer mm-hmm. in this situation, and you know, and you're too close to the situation to be able to look at things objectively. That's why. You have other people represent you. You have to be able to take a step back and say, okay, well, this isn't going to work because of X, Y, and Z. And I don't think that she's going to be capable of doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that she thinks that she's going to be able to, you know, kind of manipulate her way to whatever she needs people to say on the stand. And it's just not going to work out in her favor. But I mean, we'll see. Like, I mean, like she needs to have a very, very slim case.
Yeah.
Like she's like, if she thinks she's going to parade a bunch of people up there, they're going to be in any way helpful to her. I think that she's in for a rude awakening.
Yeah. Less is more with her. I would think at the end of the day, when the jury does get this, let's say that she never does testify. We never end up hearing anything about Tylee or JJ or her past criminal acts. And they're discussing this. Let's say some of the jurors do know about the past a bit. Are they allowed to discuss any of that in the jury room at the end of like, well, I do know this about this, or do they have to completely keep it strictly to the evidence that was presented in this case, whether they have any knowledge of anything in the past or not, to enlighten maybe those who don't?
Yeah, no, they have to stick to the facts and evidence that were presented. You can't mm-hmm. bring in anything else that wasn't part of the case in chief of either side. You can't do it.
Yeah.
So, you know, but again, what you can and can't do.
They're humans.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. It's like.
That's what I'm wondering, though. Like if it does get brought up somehow, somebody's discussing, they're like, well, she also killed her kids. What? You know, is there any safeguards to prevent that from happening in the conversation in the jury room? Is there anybody there that's a third party that can be like, whoa, whoa, this is not part of the case. We can't be doing hearsay of what you heard. Or does this just I don't know how that works technically.
Yeah, technically, no, there is no safeguard. There is no like when they're back there, they're back there alone. There's nobody back there with them. And there is if somebody brings it up and you've got, you know, you can't unring a bell situation happens back there. It happens.
Could that be looked at as prejudicial? Like if later after everything is done and if she tries to do an appeal on this, I don't know if she will, but I guess it's her. But let's say that we found out that somebody did bring this up in jury when they're deliberating. Could that be looked at as, wait a second, this should not have happened. They brought this up. They weren't supposed to. That constitutes this wasn't a fair trial because a juror introduced prejudicial information to other jurors in the jury room.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
it could definitely. You know, the question is, how is she finding that out? You know, because none of the jurors are going to be chatting with her.
Yeah, I mean, if somebody speaks out in an interview later, something like that, where like, yeah, then they talked about this, because inevitably some of these folks are going to talk and they're going to share their experience and write a book or whatever. So, I mean, if that comes out that happened, there's just, it seems like a very open and shut case, but it seems like there's a lot of pitfalls here that people could fall in as well, just to play by the rules. So we don't have that sort of issue. But again, people are human that, you don't sometimes even know where the pits are.
Well, you hope that there's at least one juror back there that's like a rule follower.
Yeah, yeah.
Say, whoa, 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 whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa. You can't bring that up. We can't consider that at all.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that cures the issue. That ultimately the juror is going to have to say, well, yeah, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, but it was brought up, but it didn't play into why we convicted her. You know, I mean, like that's ultimately what it's going to have to boil down to. If somebody let slip that came out in deliberations, you know, that her sordid background makes its way into the deliberation room and people learn of things that they didn't learn through the trial, it's going to, you know, it would get dealt with. I don't think that it would ever succeed in any way, shape or form, especially, you know, if you've got a juror who's going to say, all right, look, we can't consider that because they get an instruction on it. I mean, the safeguard is that, they get a jury instruction on it that you're not to consider anything that wasn't brought up in trial in terms of the facts and the evidence that was presented to you. You can't bring up anything that people may know from outside sources. It's not a part of this equation.
Yeah.
And as long as you've got a juror or two or more back there that are like, we can't consider that. Mm-hmm. You're like, I get it. I hear what you're saying, but that has nothing to do with this case. I think it'll be fine.
It will be interesting.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
'Tis the season for identity theft. This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But guess what? Identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss by yourself, even if you keep an eye on your bank and credit card statements. If your identity is stolen, your own U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. And all plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package. The last thing you want to do this holiday season is face drained accounts, fraudulent loans, or other financial losses from identity theft all alone. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART. Or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
'Tis the season for identity theft. This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But guess what? Identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss by yourself, even if you keep an eye on your bank and credit card statements. If your identity is stolen, your own U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. And all plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package. The last thing you want to do this holiday season is face drained accounts, fraudulent loans, or other financial losses from identity theft all alone. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART. Or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus terms and conditions apply.
Tis the season for identity theft. This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But guess what? Identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss by yourself, even if you keep an eye on your bank and credit card statements. If your identity is stolen, your own U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. And all plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package. The last thing you want to do this holiday season is face drained accounts, fraudulent loans, or other financial losses from identity theft all alone. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART. Or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tis the season for identity theft. This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But guess what? Identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss by yourself, even if you keep an eye on your bank and credit card statements. If your identity is stolen, your own U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. And all plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package. The last thing you want to do this holiday season is face drained accounts, fraudulent loans, or other financial losses from identity theft all alone. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART. Or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tis the season for identity theft. This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But guess what? Identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss by yourself, even if you keep an eye on your bank and credit card statements. If your identity is stolen, your own U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. And all plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package. The last thing you want to do this holiday season is face drained accounts, fraudulent loans, or other financial losses from identity theft all alone. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART.
or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tis the season for identity theft. This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But guess what? Identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss by yourself, even if you keep an eye on your bank and credit card statements. If your identity is stolen, your own U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. And all plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package. The last thing you want to do this holiday season is face drained accounts, fraudulent loans, or other financial losses from identity theft all alone. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART. Or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.